I'd like to welcome each of you to this time of capstone presentation. We have two this morning. The first will be from Phil Kanagi. Phil is a graduate of Eastern Mennonite University with a bachelor's in Bible and Christian Ministries. His resume shows that he's pastored five Mennonite churches in his lifetime, and is currently the lead pastor at Weaver's Mennonite Church here just outside Harrisonburg, Virginia. He's also had multiple positions in Virginia Mennonite Conference and brings experience as a truck driver. That's a unique contribution. Phil will present to us on the topic Invitation to Hope, Pastoral Leadership in Anxious Times. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, as you can see, the title of this project is Invitation to Hope, Pastoral Leadership in Anxious Times. The impetus for this project is congregational anxiety about same-gender attractions and relationships. While the broader church has been and the surrounding culture have been grappling with these matters for quite a few years, at least in some locations, Weaver's Mennonite Church, where I serve as lead pastor, has remained fairly aloof from these discussions until more recently. As cultural values and societal norms have shifted towards greater inclusion of persons who identify as LGBTQ, and as conferences and denominational church bodies have sought ways of navigating the swirl of tensions and controversy often associated with these matters, there is a growing sense at WMC, short for Weavers, that it would be irresponsible for us to just ignore the topic. In addition, a survey of youth and adult Sunday school classes in our congregation in the summer of 2015 asked participants to name the most important issues that our congregation should study over the next 10 years. And the survey revealed that across the age spectrum, the number one issue that participants believe should be addressed is same-gender attractions and relationships. Our pastoral team at Weaver's is under no illusions that everyone wants to talk about these things for the same reasons, however. At Weaver's, perspectives range across the entire traditional progressive spectrum. This capstone project has two components. The first component has to do with leadership. What kind of leadership is needed in our congregation to facilitate informed studies and healthy discussions about this project? And more specifically, how am I functioning personally as a leader in the congregational system I have been called to pastor? The second component, then, is to initiate and give guidance to a collaborative project with our congregational leaders to design a process that will help our congregation to study and talk about same-gender attractions and relationships and some related matters as well. Varying degrees of anxiety about same-gender orientations and relationships are already a given in our congregation. So one of the goals of this second component is to direct these energies in constructive ways rather than have them spiral into out of reactionary and damaging kinds of ways. But there needs to be a structure, a safe holding environment to enable these conversations to happen. An effective holding environment, according to Heifetz and Linsky, some of you are familiar with their works, help to corral the flow of anxiety in the congregational system where there is conflict or where there is the potential for conflict. It also provides a forum for education, a place for people to listen to each other, and a spiritual environment for people to find hope in times of uncertainty. And undergirding this goal is my own conviction that anxious times hold not only the potential for fragmentation and wounding, but also for creativity, important learnings, and strategies for strengthening congregational life and congregational relationships. Peril and opportunity often come in the same package, but coming out on the opportunity side of the ledger does require a great deal of careful thought. Back to leadership. For the guts of this project, I did a lot of rereading of books and materials I have accumulated over the years in regards to both leadership and same-gender relationships. And I interviewed pastors and congregational leaders of congregations who have already conducted studies and have had discussions in their own congregations about these matters to see what I could learn. In addition, I interviewed one conference executive and one denominational executive, asking them specifically about leadership issues. There were common themes that emerged in all of these conversations. The number one characteristic about leadership named among these persons as essential to leadership is the ability to exercise non-anxious leadership. Non-anxious presence is the capacity to manage or self-regulate one's own behavior during times of anxiety. The challenge is to acknowledge one's own anxiety without letting it become the driver of one's behavior. When apprehension or worry overwhelms us, we quickly lose the capacity to process other important information. And then we are likely to become transmitters of anxiety, which can easily fuel the very reactionary spiral we are trying to avoid. This, again, is one of the reasons for establishing an effective holding environment. Rather than being only the transmitter of lower brain functions, it increases the capacity to process other important information. A second important quality of leadership, especially in anxious times, is the capacity to navigate polarities, even to think paradoxically. Exhaling and inhaling, for example, are interdependent realities. You cannot do one without the other, or you soon will be in serious trouble. Grace and truth, purity and mercy are interdependent realities, I believe, as well. Neither should stand alone. They complement one another. The tricky thing, though, is discerning how each informs the other when applied to our daily lives and where to put the accent. Perhaps one of the most defining characteristics of leadership these days, however, needs to be a sense of hope. Despair seems to be much more characteristic of our culture these days than hope, not only in the political landscape, but in our churches. Congregations, conferences, and denominations are often polarized by their differences about LGBTQ questions and concerns, and often feel paralyzed. Despair and loss of hope are pernicious challenges for both traditionalists and progressives in regards to these issues. Traditionalists worry that if the church modifies what it has said for centuries about same-gender relationships, something too precious will be lost, and the church will uproot its faith and lose its grounding in biblical truth. Progressives worry that if certain modifications are not embraced, the church will lose its cultural relevance at best and perpetuate an appalling environment of shame and abuse towards sexual minorities at worst. People all across the theological spectrum worry that the church is missing the boat of what God is really doing in the world. So it seems to me there's an awful lot of despair and loss of hope about the church's future. This is why the title of this project, Invitation to Hope, is so vitally important to me. It reflects a deep pastoral concern I have for the church. Psalms 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." The earth is the Lord and all that is in it. It's a phrase early Anabaptists often used to remind both themselves and government authorities who really is in charge. It was thus a political statement, but also a confession of faith, affirming that there is a different narrative at work in the world than only the narrative of hopelessness and despair. The problem with the narrative of despair, regardless of who represents it, is that it turns adherents into functional atheists. And that's a serious detriment to hope. So, Invitation to Hope is a summons to align ourselves with the narrative of hope as found in the reconciling work of Jesus, rather than aligning ourselves with the narrative of fear and despair that's found so often in our world and indeed in our own hearts. One of several biblical narratives that shaped my thinking about hope is the 40-year wilderness wanderings of the Israelites. Gilbert Rendell, in his book Leading Change in the Congregation, suggests that it took Moses 40 years to cross the wilderness with the Israelites because that's how long it took for the people to be transformed into a people who learned to trust God and depend on him even for their daily food. In the current climate of tensions swirling around same-gender issues, it seems to me that people all across the traditional progressive continuum are encountering a wilderness narrative that actually has many similarities. Both poles struggle with despair and hopelessness about the future of the church, at least to some degree. Both are trying to be faithful. Both are trying to interpret Scripture with integrity. Both have a lot of suspicion and mistrust of the other, sometimes for good reasons. Both have tendencies to engage in fight or flight mechanisms, and both and everyone in between are in this wilderness of uncertainty, which just may be precisely where God needs us to be. What if instead of seeing this desert as an enemy to struggle against, we would see it as God's invitation? As God coming to us in disguise, leading us through a process of wilderness cleansing in order to make us a new people, something far more significant than simply deciding who's right and who's wrong. The call to the wilderness occurs fairly often in the Bible, and it has hope at its core. The temptation is to short-circuit the wilderness by fleeing or by demanding our own way, which often is little more than an attempt to relieve our own discomfort with tension and anxiety. So as I see it, part of the responsibility of leadership is to recognize the wilderness and not try to get us out of it too quickly. Rendell says, "To be a leader in such times requires patience and the courage to hold people close to the pain and possibility that can transform. It's imperative, therefore, that I attach my own self to the narrative of hope, rooted in a gospel that is robust enough for the times we live in. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it." There are many more qualities of effective leadership I could name, but I must move on to the second component of the project. For the second component of this project, I ask pastors and congregational leaders what sort of process and structure they have used in their congregation, what was helpful or what was not helpful, what subjects or topics they addressed, etc. And I also invited them to share with me some of their resources, their outlines, and so on, if they were comfortable doing so. About half of the interview participants did share some of their outlines, their themes studied, and so on. But I was quickly disabused of any and all illusions that a perfect template would emerge out of these interviews that I could then use in our congregation at Weavers. Different congregations draw from different resources. Most developed at least some of their own resources and adapted others to fit their own context. What is clear to me is that there are no clear maps for this work. There is no cookbook to follow, no established rules to lead us through this process, and yet congregational leaders are tasked with guiding their congregations through a rapidly changing social and religious landscape, not only in regards to human sexuality, but in regards to things like post-Christendom. We live in an age of the nuns, and all sorts of other things that may fit into what seems like a long season of liminality for the church. Not finding a ready-made template for our studies at Weavers, along with lesson plans, discussion questions, and so on, it means there is still a lot of work to do beyond this capstone project. So our project is still under development, and it may change and adapt as we continue in our congregation to collaborate together. At this point, however, four primary areas have been identified which this process attempts to initially respond to. First is creating a behavioral covenant with the congregation. This is about discerning how we will conduct ourselves as participants in the process. It's learning how we will talk together before we start talking. The second area has to do with biblical interpretation. Obviously a huge area, since people read the Bible so differently and also interpret it differently. But this study seeks to understand some of the presuppositions we bring to the text, as well as the hermeneutics we use for interpretation. A third area we want to address is faithful sexuality for everyone. This is broadening the discussion to include heterosexuals. Purity, fidelity, ethics, sex, and sexual beings made in the image of God, these are matters of importance regardless of one's sexual orientation. So are issues like power as it relates to things like pornography, sexual abuse, and other forms of sexual brokenness. A fourth area for study and education, then, is about same-gender attractions and relationships. Part of this is education. Part of it inevitably will lead us back to biblical interpretation. Our leadership team at WMC is preparing to explore this matrix of issues over a three-year period, with areas 1 and 2 as the focus for the first year, area 3 as the focus in year 2, and area 4 in year 3. A format for study that fits our congregational system then looks something like this. An introductory workshop in the fall quarter of each year to introduce that particular year's theme and area of emphasis. We would ask all Sunday school classes, youth through adult, and or small groups to read or study one or two books that we will name as resources for that particular year's emphasis of study. That would be during the fall quarter. And then we will focus January event of each year on that year's emphasis of study. January event at Weaver's is an event in which the congregation meets every Wednesday evening in January for a meal, a time of fellowship, and study together. This practice already has a long history at Weaver's, and it provides an opportunity for us to break down each year's emphasis in this study into smaller parts. A three-year study process is not envisioned to be continuous for 3 years, but points of engagement during the fall quarter and the month of January. It is intended to provide times for intense study, but then times to back off and reflect. The process is also intended to hold the congregation in a holding environment that enables thoughtful engagement over a period of time, and makes room for that brooding, hovering wind spirit of God to shape and form us more and more into the likeness of Christ. This is formational work. And it's about shaping the soul of our congregation as much as anything. Just as Israel's wilderness journey was invaluable for their formation as a people of God, so I believe the significance of our process at Weaver's will be invaluable for strengthening congregational relationships, deepening understandings, and forming us as a people of God. And if this process helps us to be shaped and formed by the Spirit of God into the people of God, then we will have done something much greater than only educate ourselves about human sexuality. And I pray God it will be so. Listed yet on the slides that follow are resources that speak to the areas of focus I have named in this project. The list keeps growing, but here's a start. For resources for understanding congregational anxiety and conflict and creating holding environments, take a quick glance at those. Let's keep on moving there, Matt. For creating behavioral covenants. Then some resources for thinking about biblical interpretation. I'm not expecting you to read all of those, but you may see a few. And then a longer, selected bibliography across the theological spectrum of same-gender attractions and relationships. These are offered with the conviction that if we only listen to our own voice, or only those whose perspective we share, we probably don't learn very much or understand each other. So there are several slides on this one. And then the other, some resources relating to discernment and some other kinds of resources that I find helpful. Then there's a bibliography that I used for the main body of the final paper that's on Moodle, if you care to read that paper at all. And that's it. I want to thank you all for coming, especially those of you who participated in the interviews. There are a number of you here who participated as interviewees. I appreciate your sharing. There are persons here from our leadership team at Weavers. I appreciate very much your presence here. All three of our pastoral staff are here and one of our elders. Micah is the new kid on the block for us, but he is our new youth pastor. And most of all, my most loyal supporter, my wife Janine. Thanks be to God. Nate. Thank you.